Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there, and don't forget to check out our new blog. I think you'll like it. I hope you'll like it. We worked awfully hard on it to give you something that would make it a little, make what we do a little bit more convenient for you to use, and so check it out. It's an audio blog. Have you ever seen one of those? Well, you know, I'm not going to do anything like anybody else does. Joan Pride knows all about that. We never do anything that's normal or like anybody else does. And so I hope you'll check it out there at smallbusinessadvocate.com. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Hello there, Jim. Hey, you were actually playing some music I like. You played some Van Halen.
I finally played something you liked, huh?
I actually saw Van Halen last year.
Oh, Joan, can I touch you?
I would
you and about
you
10
didn't.
Million other people have seen Van Halen. Is that supposed to get you some kind of a little button or something?
No, I think it's great.
Oh, yeah. No, they're good.
I think they were great.
Yeah, they are. Joan, today is the birthday of the Department of the Interior.
You always have these great little
1916.
Bits of
but
trivia.
Here's the question. Why would something that's in charge of the outdoors be called the Department of the Interior?
Huh? Also, I don't know, Jim. You're blowing my mind.
Here's another one, Joan. On this day, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed above 36,052.
Wow.
You know what year that was? I'm sorry, 3,600. Oh. 3,600. Just over 3,000. It closed, and that was an all-time high.
Probably about 5 years ago.
Well, it was 93.
Oh, not too bad.
How about that?
Yeah.
And I remember in a book, as I remember in that the Kiplinger, Mr. Kiplinger and your organization put out, probably in the late 80s, predicted that the stock market would go to 6,000 by like the mid 90s, and you guys were right. Nobody else predicted that.
See.
Yeah. So I remember that.
Okay.
I pay attention.
All right.
Hey, Joan, let's talk about Congress and what they're of course right now they're just out there eating barbecue and kissing babies and basically making the world safe from what they do when they're back in Washington, aren't they?
Well, then they're going to come back and spend a lot of money. They're going to spend like drunken sailors, apparently.
That's what you guys say when
That's
they come back
say.
Next month.
I think we should have used that term, drunken sailors. I'm sorry,
I know it.
We didn't.
I know that's a good one. Who uses that? What's one? Is it McCain who does that? I've forgotten who. No.
Think so,
Steve Forbes does that.
Oh, does he?
That.
Okay.
Yeah. He's going to be on tomorrow, by the way.
Oh. Nice.
Anyway, okay. They're going to come back, but why are they going to think that they can spend so much money, Joan?
Well, because the Treasury's been getting more revenue in recently from corporate tax receipts.
They have the money, don't they?
Yeah. See,
now, what do we
shrinking.
Call this, Joan? What do we? The deficit's shrinking. They've got more money.
I call it a mirage, but
what
you
do they call
whatever
this?
You
they,
want.
It's called supply side economics, Joan.
Oh, good. Oh, right. Trickle down. I forgot.
Yes.
Yeah.
And guess what, Joan? It works.
Well,
it's a beautiful
we'll see.
Thing.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, the evidence is in front of you. But isn't it interesting that and I'm not talking, this is not about politics, Joan, because this is a bipartisan rant that I'm giving here. The thing is that they all complain, or not all of them, but a lot of them complain about the tax breaks. But when it creates more revenue, they never think about, they actually like that benefit, don't they?
Oh, sure.
They like the money and like to be able to spend the money. And it's just been interesting. Isn't it ironic that when we have a deficit, they spend money, but when we have a surplus, they don't? See, we don't have a surplus. We just got more money than we thought we were going to have.
Yeah, so there's still a deficit. So I don't know why everybody's so excited.
But back in the 90s, late 90s, when we had the surplus, which was really from our artificially inflated economy, but we did have a surplus, a true surplus, they actually wouldn't spend money then because nobody wanted to break the surplus. Nobody wanted to put us in a deficit spending.
Well, but it still happened.
But well, it happened because of 9-1-1 primarily. That was one of the main things, and the recession that followed, or before that, I guess I should say. But my point is, it's just ironic to me that when we had a surplus, everybody was afraid to spend money because they didn't want to go below the surplus. And now that we have a deficit, their attitude
is, what the heck, make it bigger.
Yeah. You know what? So what if it's what's a billion here and a billion there?
Right.
So
not real money.
So I think we're never going to see any kind of spending restraints out of Congress until we get a surplus.
That's right.
And Joan, the only way to do that is supply side economics.
Well, I think the problem with the surplus was nobody could agree on how to use it. See,
yes.
That was the problem.
It was gridlock at its most beautiful, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah. you're saying, you guys report that the corporate tax receipts are helping. They're helping a lot. They're up quite a bit.
Right.
The deficit is down to about this year and next year about $300 billion, which is pretty good. Only about 2.5% of GDP.
Yeah.
Which is not too bad. Also, you guys say that they're going to. What are they going to do with defense spending, Joan?
There'll be more of that, and there'll be some more on domestic programs. But about 75% of this additional money is going to be for Afghanistan and Iraq, and also to spend on Homeland Security.
On Homeland Security, maybe they'll
right.
be. I think they're going to beef up some of that a little bit.
Right.
What about the? What about tax breaks? What are they going to do with those things?
Well, we're pretty sure that they're going to extend a bunch of tax breaks that are scheduled to expire in the next few years.
Right.
There's a great deal for small firms on higher expensing limits that they're going to keep.
Right.
Also credits for hiring.
What is that? Section 179, is that right, Joan?
Exactly, Section 179. Well, very good.
Yeah.
You
taught me well, Joan.
Yeah, right.
I was talking about 179 before you were born. Writing your first column, Joan. But no, seriously, that's the expensing. That's the direct expensing that went from $25,000 a year for small companies to direct expense capital items instead of depreciating them.
Right.
To now it's 105, I think, in 2005.
I know it's over 100, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's 105, I think, and maybe 104. But my company hasn't quite hit that number yet, so we haven't had to keep up with which one that is. But anyway, that's going to be extended, it looks like. And what else?
There are some credits. The Work Opportunity Credit and the Welfare to Work Tax Credit for hiring folks will be extended. But also the big one here is the top tax rate on dividends and capital gains of 15%.
Yeah.
That's scheduled to expire. And if that expires, then it goes back to whatever your tax rate is.
Right.
And your tax rate is most assuredly above 15%.
Most of the time it is.
Most of the time.
And so, that's a lot of the surplus, I think, can be allocated to lowering that rate. When people have lower rates on their capital gains, they're more likely to sell those items and move those assets to other assets, to take it out of real estate, put it into stocks or vice versa. And when that happens, it's a taxable event.
Right.
And the government gets that money and the politicians get to spend it. Stand by, Joan. Quick break, 20 after. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we were having so much fun talking about all the revenue coming in and all the tax breaks and everything, but you're going to rain on our parade a little bit, aren't you?
You betcha.
We're going to lose the merriment?
This fall's merriment only means painful hangovers later, so
did
we
you
actually
write that,
allude
Joan?
Indirectly to the drunken sailors.
Did you write, did you write that, that, that
I line? Wish I could take credit for it, but isn't that great? Very subtle.
Yeah, yeah. So what's all that mean?
The long-term budget outlook is bleak. We say it right there.
Yeah.
Sorry, I hate to be a killjoy, but, we're back to the same problem that kind of looms over everything. Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare.
That's right. And see, the thing is the United States does not have a revenue problem, Joan. We have a spending problem.
Spending problem, yeah.
And that's
we have
just
an entitlement spending problem.
I mean, Joan, it goes back to the Social Security Trust Fund, which is a joke. Yeah. I mean, the politicians are wringing their hands, and they're trying to come up with all these different ways, and they're fighting and arguing about all the different ways to save Social Security. But if we had the billions of dollars, not billions, I'm sorry, trillions of dollars that they have spent out of the trust fund and left a little IOU or a big IOU, if they hadn't spent that money and we had that money for the trust fund, Social Security might not be in such a bad shape. I mean, spend money where they spend money they don't have. They spend money that was assigned for something that was intended for something else. We don't have a revenue problem, John. We have a spending problem.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do about that, because you know what? There apparently is no leadership in terms of fiscal restraint. There is no leadership.
But I mean, I've said over and over again, eliminate, throw down a rat hole the domestic discretionary budget. Solved your problem.
That's right. Yeah, because of the entitlements.
And defense spending has been ratcheted
up with both
of those.
That's right. But defense spending is something that's not sort of contractual. That's something that could change over time. The entitlements are virtually contractual, aren't they?
Right.
And Joan, think about this. And I think you guys pointed this out somewhere in the letter. Think about when the baby boomers retire.
Oh, I'd rather not.
Think about that, Joan.
In
15 years, in about, 6 or 7 years, the first baby boomers are going to retire. But, Joan,
right,
there's 75 to 80 million baby boomers. What happens when a third or more of them go on Medicaid?
Well, I want to find that out, because I'm at the end of the baby boom. So boomers ahead of me are going to suck up all the resources.
Hey, Joan.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
I know.
As Tony Soprano would say, forget about it.
I'll have nothing.
Ain't happening. You'll have nothing, Joan. I hope you've got a good deal there with Kiplinger. Because it ain't happening. I mean, think about this now. You know, as you know, when many of the elderly are able to go on Medicaid, which makes them basically a ward of the state, doesn't it?
Well, that's true, but I know those rules are tightening in many states now because it costs so much. So you really have to spend down your assets first.
And, of course, Medicaid is pretty much mostly state-funded, isn't it?
Well, I think it's together, the states and the federal government,
right,
although it's more states.
But Medicare also, which is a contractual thing that every senior has available. We had an expert on the show earlier this week, John Fox, and he says Medicare is a train wreck that he can actually see. It's not just way down the tracks. He says he can see that from where he is. It's not that far off.
Right.
And so we got these major problems, and yet the government is spending money like drunken sailors, as you say, on things. And I don't know what we're going to do about it. But one of these days it could get really ugly, like in the next recession or something.
Right.
Right.
Well,
so let's move over and talk about prices over in the economy section on page 2.
Okay.
Wholesale prices are going to jump, but it's not going to signal inflation. How does that work?
Well, we're saying, the indexes have been pushed up by energy costs, and we think that those costs will be passed on to consumers, but not across the board. We think that a lot of companies won't pass on their energy price increases, so that's going to keep, I guess, retail prices at bay to a large extent.
You want me to tell you how that works?
Sure.
Much, much larger percentage of the economy every year is created by small businesses.
Right.
Some small businesses who are in the shipping business, distributors and wholesalers and freight companies and manufacturers who that is a big part of their business, which fuel purchases are a major purchase for them. They're smart enough. They're sharp enough, and it's part of their world to negotiate increases in their rates, in their prices. When as prices go up, their prices are sort of tied, so to speak, to the fuel costs.
Yes.
But they're not the average small business out there who can't. I mean, when a restaurant gets higher prices because their supplier raises their rates because of fuel, how does he change his menu? See what I mean?
Could,
how does a dry cleaner go up 13 cents they're not likely to do that, and that's what
dry
happens.
Cleaners are a good example because there's so many out there that are cutting prices, because they're large conglomerates.
Exactly. So no, this what you guys describe here in this one paragraph, a lot of that pressure that's not happening because of higher fuel prices, small businesses are absorbing it, and it's hurting our bottom lines. 29 after. We'll be right back with Joan Pride after these messages. Stay with us.
As you stand by me.
Business. He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. But there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for listening today, for hanging around with us. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. We don't care how you're listening. We don't care when you're listening. We don't care where you are, if you're in the United States or if you're somewhere else in the world. Joan, we have people listening in Japan. How about that?
Wow, I didn't know
that. On the internet. Yeah, all the time, all over the world. We hear from people all over the world who subscribe to the newsletter and listen to the show. And that internet thing is pretty cool, isn't it?
Oh, definitely.
The voice of Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, one of the things, back to the letter.
Right.
You guys report that inflation is likely to slow next year. Is this an indication that Mr. Greenspan is
leaving?
He is leaving, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But does this mean that you think he's accomplishing his goal?
Well, boy,
he hates inflation, doesn't he?
He's doing everything he can to. He's beginning to sound like Paul Volcker out there.
Does he hate inflation worse than he does bubbles? Which does he hate worse, do you think, Joan?
Well, I think he's worried that bubbles cause inflation, and maybe that's why he hates them so much.
I know I've said this before, folks, but this is the funniest thing when I think about him. You remember the movie The Jerk when the sniper was shooting at Steve Martin at the gas station? Did you see that show?
I saw that movie years and years ago.
Yeah, and the sniper keeps missing him, and he hits the oil cans, and they're popping oil all over the mm-hmm. place, see? Mm-hmm. And Steve Martin says, he hates these cans. And so I've decided that Mr. Volcker hates these bubbles.
Funny the things that you remember.
I know, and I have that kind of mind, I'm afraid. So anyway,
afraid.
He's tilting at these bubbles. He's going after now he's going after the real estate bubble.
And he popped the stock market, now he's going to pop it.
He sure did, but he's simultaneously going after inflation.
Right.
And Joan, I think if I had, and I don't think he thinks this way, but it's kind of funny to think that he might be saying, you know what, one thing that's not going to happen, when I go out, we're not going to be trending toward higher inflation, and we're going to be trending toward lower inflation. That's going to be, people are going to remember my last few months and how things were when I left. And by the way, he's leaving in January, right?
Right, and so as long as his last few months don't put us into a recession, that's fine.
Well, I know. That's the point.
I
always get nervous when these leaders start legacy shopping.
Right.
You know, that's what happens when presidents leave.
That's
true. They start making weird decisions based on their legacy. And I wish we didn't have legacies, and maybe things would be better. Also, you guys point out that there are going to be some positive indicators about the economic health. What are some of those?
Yeah, I want to talk about one of these. Linen rentals. I'm very confused about this.
Well, Joan, you only eat it. You only go to restaurants with tablecloths.
Well, I don't know what they mean by linen. Do they mean that like the linens you use in hotels also?
Of course.
Or
yeah,
linen
anything,
rentals.
Any
no,
industrial,
rentals.
Any commercial linens. Like
No, it's
like,
rentals. So I guess it would be renting for a party.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see what you mean. Rentals.
See, now I realize.
Rentals. Well, they're all rentals. The people who are in the the linen companies who serve restaurants and hotels and everything, a lot of the hotels and everything, you know, they don't sell those. They rent that stuff.
But the linens on the beds, I think, are owned by the hotels. Because
probably so.
Having been a hotel maid.
So
about
it's not hotels, it's restaurants
ago,
then, right?
The hotels, they have washing machines and dryers for that.
Linen rentals. So, Joan, this is riveting.
Why did we pick linen rentals?
I have no idea.
Why? Yeah.
I can't believe you said
that. But the point is they're up.
Well, that's really good. I know the linen
they're
people,
they're apparently
the national
indicator.
Linen people and all the other folks are really happy about that. Explain this shrinking excess capacity line for me, Joan. Do you understand that?
Shrinking excess capacity will fuel a 7% business spending gain.
Yeah, can you explain that paragraph to me?
Well, I think I can at least explain the underscore.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I guess if there's less excess capacity, that means that inventories are being drawn down.
Yeah.
And so they
that's a good thing.
They'll need to stock up, because we've talked about lean and mean and just in time and all of that.
All right.
Because once you have inventories getting out of control, that's a bad sign for the future of the economy.
Well, exactly. And also, what it says to me is that if what you're saying is true, that means that the economy is healthier. That means that probably production is going to gear up a little bit. Manufacturing is probably not too good.
Right.
I mean, not too bad. Probably
not
doing pretty well. And so I agree with you. I think that's the case. And that's by 7%.
Right.
Which is a pretty good growth there. So,
yeah.
So, and folks, what Joan just described is really kind of the opposite of what creates a recession. So I think that bodes well for the future economy. 22. We're going to be right back after these messages. Joan Pryde is our guest. Here's the Stones to take us out. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you tomorrow in this slot right here, Steve Forbes will be back on the show with us. He's going to introduce his new book, which is all about flat tax. And Joan and I are going to talk about that in just a few minutes, the flat tax thing. Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, the website is kiplinger.com, and that's where people can find out about all of your publications, can't they?
That's right.
From the first thing, I guess, is that you got that magazine thing, right?
Right, Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Every month.
We also have all those letters, too.
Every month. Yeah, you got all those letters, that gaggle of letters. You got the flagship, which is the Kiplinger letter. Since 23, it's been around. And I was an original subscriber, but I have been for a long time. And that one comes out weekly. Then there's the biweeklies, the California, the tax, and the agriculture letter. And in addition to subscribing on the website, which they can still get that 30-day free trial, can't they, Joan?
Absolutely.
That I work so hard for.
Right.
And they can also call a phone number. Now, you got that number, don't you?
Yeah, our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And so that's – folks, I encourage you to check these out. I mean, they're – once you – the thing about the Kiplinger letter is once you get hooked on it – I mean, once you start taking it, you get hooked on it. That's what happens. So,
that's good.
So
that's what we like.
It's right. You like people to become Kiplinger addicts, don't you?
We like Kiplinger addicts, sure.
Joan, one of the things that you guys point out is that foreign firms think that the U.S. is a good place to put their money. Tell us about that.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Well, we're saying that foreign direct investment is going to go up 25%. Well, part of it is the weak dollar, but also it's the U.S. economy.
They like what they see over here, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Where are they going to put their money? Europe?
Dr. Bill Dunkelberg, one of our economists on the Brain Trust, who's the chief economist for the NFIB and a professor at Temple.
Right.
He said on Tuesday that the United States, that Americans have a zero savings rate. That means we're spending every penny we can get our hands on.
Wow.
But other parts of the people in other parts of the world are saving like crazy. And so that money has to go somewhere. And the people who are saving, many of the people who are saving, Joan, do not live in places where investors who control that money, those deposits, where they want to put that money.
Right. That's right.
So we are the beneficiary of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And probably without deserving it.
Probably.
In some ways we do, because we have a very efficient economy.
Right.
We have efficient capital markets. We have when a dollar of sales drops to the bottom line and makes four pennies of profit more efficiently in this country than any other country in the world. And on the other end of the spectrum is probably China.
Right.
In terms of well-developed countries. But that's one of the things. And so if you're wondering why, Joan, with all of our deficits and everything, thank God that we have foreign investment, right?
Oh, yeah. No question about it.
So that's something that to, actually it's a good thing now, but it's also kind of a thing to be concerned about, isn't it, Joan?
Well, to a certain extent, yes, because if they were ever to pull their money out, we would be in big trouble.
There was a movie 25 years ago, and I hate to tell anybody to go see a movie that Jane Fonda was in, but she was in this movie 25 years ago called Rollover.
Never heard of it.
It was a fascinating movie about this kind of thing that you just mentioned. And if you can go find it in the archives, folks, it'd be pretty interesting to see again that right now. Joan, let's move over to page 3 and talk about tax reform. I mentioned that Steve Forbes is going to be on the show tomorrow talking about his new book, which is all about flat tax. As you know, he's the flat tax guru and proposes it, at the drop of a hat, he'll talk to you about flat tax.
Right. Well, what we're saying is, you know, it's not getting a lot of headlines, but the president did appoint his tax reform advisory panel, and they've been working away, taking testimony and working on their report for months now. But what we're saying is, you know, and don't expect any major tax reform proposals to hit Congress this year, but when they work on this next year, it's going to be very hard politically to completely get rid of the income tax and replace it the graduated income tax and replace it either with a flat income tax or with a national sales tax. And the reason is because for both of those, the rate would have to be set so high. Politically, for political reasons, the rate would end up having to be set so high that it would be prohibitively expensive for people.
I think what Steve's going to say, though, I think you guys say, what, 21% or 25%? What is the minimum on
flat
the flat tax?
Flat tax would have to be 21%, and national sales tax would have to be 25%.
I think Steve says it's going to be more like about 17%. And I think what he's dialing into the equation, Joan, is what you and I talked about earlier, and that's supply side the effects of supply side economics. Mm-hmm. The more productive you make people, and the less you tax people, the more productive they're likely to be, and to generate the revenue that the government needs without having to collect.
Well, you'd have to look at his assumptions versus our assumptions,
right?
Because you would have to look at where we think, for example, you're going to have poor people completely exempted.
You know,
where do you put that exemption? Certain things have been taken off the table, such as the deduction for mortgage. The president wants to maintain a deduction
for mortgage
interest and for charitable contributions.
Mm-hmm.
If you take those away, you could certainly set the rate lower, but if you keep them, then you have a problem there. So
there's a lot
of different things that factor into that.
The main thing is the problem with the national sales tax is that.
Well, I was just talking about the flat tax.
No, I know, the flat tax. No, I agree with you. But moving on to the national sales tax, the problem with that is, if we have a flat tax, basically that will replace the current tax code.
Right.
You know, by definition, it's implicit that it will be
But
replaced.
You still have the same collection mechanism in place.
You would have, just changing the way you calculate it. But with a national sales tax, you'd have to abolish, what is it, the 16th Amendment, I think it is?
And the IRS.
Yes, in order to get national sales tax.
Right.
And I don't see that happening. So national sales tax is not good because we'd have income tax and a national sales tax.
You'd have some angry states.
That is not good. Tim Till, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, stranger.
Welcome back. It's 7 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend, Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Joan, let's just to wrap up on this tax reform thing, I just want to emphasize that a sales tax, for people who are trying to decide, okay, which one do I like? Do I like flat tax? Because a lot of people say, I know I don't like what we have, so I like the idea of anything else but what we have. And so so they're saying, okay, my options are flat tax or national sales tax. And so one really easy way that helped me make a decision is that a national sales tax can be imposed without doing away with the income tax. And the only way to get rid of the income tax is if we, with the national sales tax, and for that not to be the case, I should say, is if we abolish what I think, if I'm not mistaken, is the 16th Amendment. I've forgotten. It's one of those amendments that sets out the income tax. Because I don't trust, and I don't think anybody should trust our government with an income tax and a national sales tax like they have in Europe. They have both of them, and it's eating them alive.
Well, see, that's the old camel's nose under the tent.
That's exactly right. So we don't want to have national sales tax, folks, unless they abolish the income tax. But whereas if we have a flat tax, that replaces the income tax under the same amendment in the Constitution. Just a different way of calculating it. So anyway, we're going to hear more about that tomorrow when Steve joins us, Steve Forbes. Joan, let's move down to Sarbanes-Oxley and talk about that. This is a big one right here.
I would say so.
Well, the problem is, as we know, Sarbanes-Oxley, and we've covered this in the last couple of weeks with some experts on this topic. But Joan, Sarbanes-Oxley was, here, to me, here's the best way to think about Sarbanes-Oxley. It was, as one of my experts, as Fred Marmon said on the show, one of our compliance experts said, it was the most significant change to the securities law since 1934.
Wow.
And guess what? They did it in 90 days. Now, what
yeah,
does that
did.
Tell you?
Does I
that,
remember.
Doesn't that frighten you? To think? I mean, yeah. If you think about what Fred said, and then you realize they did it in 90 days, there's no way it could be a good thing.
Yeah.
And so the bad news is, though, I mean, I'm going to let the big companies fend for themselves. It's bad for the small companies, Joan, because the small companies, especially the small publicly held companies, the smaller cap, the ones with small capitalization, they have to comply the same way as GM or any of the big companies. And it's just prohibitive, the cost.
Right. And what's interesting that I had not realized was even privately held small companies get caught in this whole web.
That's right.
Because they supply public companies.
Right. Right. And so what we've got to do is they've got to come back. And you guys point out that they're going to give some relief to small companies. But, Joan, I don't think what you're reporting is enough.
Right.
See, they're going to allow them to more time. Well, we don't need more time. The small companies don't need more time. They need to be treated differently.
Right. Well,
they do. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like the redefinition of small that they're going to do might help.
Well, and see, some people might be saying, "Okay, Blasting, why are you talking about this?" Well, the reason I'm talking about it is because there are a lot of small business owners out there who want to take their company public, and this 404 compliance of the Sarbanes-Oxley bill could cause them to either never go public or maybe put them off 4 or 5 years. I've talked to more than one company who went public. In fact, the president, one of the founders of Administaff was on this show 2 weeks ago, and I said, if you had to have 404 compliance when you went public in 97, what would you have done? And as I remember, he said something like, it probably would have put us off 5 years.
Right. Oh, sure. I know public companies who have gone private because of this.
Right. So I feel for those people who really want to grow their business to the next level and who need to do that, and they're running up against this wall that they're the 404 compliance thing. Joan, over on page 4, you guys are saying that we might as well expect to have higher gas prices as far as the eye can see.
Boy, $2.75 coming, and it's already that high and higher here.
But you're not saying it's going to get a lot higher in the next year or so, but we need to count on those levels, don't we?
Right. It might drop back a little bit, but you're not going below $2. You can easily say that.
I don't see too much out there that's going to change that's creating this
right.
These prices, because it's mostly a supply and demand issue.
Sure.
There are other factors, but the main one is the supply and demand.
It is.
Joan, thank you for being here. Good job
today.
Thank
you, Jim.
We will see you next time.
Sounds good.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and I want to remind you that a ship in the harbor is safe. But that's not what ships were made for. This is Jim Blasingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.